This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Politics.
Eita, welcome to another installment of Wow What a Week, hashtag Politics. My name is Fresh, he is Botang, and you are welcome. This week on the episode, Treasury says the city of Johannesburg is broke and Executive Mayor Dada Morero's been put on notice. The big four white shoe law firms are in court trying to gut the legal sector code, with the BLA standing in the doorway. And then yesterday, the Concord dropped the Palapala judgment. So what we're going to be doing is speculating, because we are recording just before the judgment. 521 days in the making of waiting. And while all of that was brewing, the president was at Mnangagwa's farm in Kwekwe in Zimbabwe, posing for picture with a man whose SA assets the Hawks have already frozen because he's accused of money laundering, amongst other things. Botsang, where do we start? Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Fresh. Morning to the followers and the viewers. I sincere apologies for last week.
Botsang had a bereavement in the family. Condolences.
Thanks, Brother Fresh.
And and shout out to your grandmother for an incredible innings.
Yeah.
91 years not out.
Yeah. No, it didn't come as a surprise for the last 3 months. But before that, we thought we were going to celebrate 100 with her.
Mm.
And now her health has deteriorated in the last 3 to 4 months.
Sure.
And just when we thought she's going to hold on, she's strong. Mm. And then she gave up on us. But look, she has run the race.
Sure.
I'm the first child, the firstborn of the firstborn.
Aha.
So you know what was more said?
So you were her first grandchild?
I'm the first grandchild. But also people were surprised, why do I call her Ma?
Yes.
And I call my mother OC.
Yes.
Because my mom had me when she was in matric.
Oh, yes.
And after giving birth in May, she went home during Easter holidays.
Mm.
Around April, gave birth to me in May. It's my birthday next week, Saturday.
I was about to say.
Gave birth to me in May. When the schools were reopening end of June, she went back to school to hide her matric.
Ah, yes.
And she left me with my grandmother. So the mother that I knew was my grandma.
Absolutely.
And then when she finished matric, she went to a nursing college.
Mm.
First year, second year, got married to dad, got pregnant with my sister.
Yep.
So I never had her attention.
Yes.
And only in my, early teens, around 8, 9, 10, I started, because my dad got a house.
Yes.
And I started living with both my parents. So my grandmother was the mother who mothered me from age around 0 to almost 8.
So you are turning 54 in exactly a week.
Yes, sir.
Looking back at the last 44 years, what was it about Ma? What are you going to miss the most?
My cooking skills, bruh.
Yes.
That's where they come from, by the way.
This man is bad news in the kitchen. Bad news. Yo.
My cooking skills, but the discipline.
Yeah.
The discipline that Ma installed on me personally.
Yes.
And you know, we are over 100. She had 11 kids, of which 5 are still alive, 49 grandchildren, and 56 great-grandchildren,
what?
And 2 great-great-great-children. So,
what?
Yeah. But 3 things I learned from my grandmother, Fresh. One, her lessons to me was saying, I must all of the time make sure I defend and protect family, no matter what differences.
Yes.
The second lesson, she had taught me to respect all adults, even if they are not my parents. Even if they come from families that I'm not related to, all adults, I must treat them always as parents. But the last one, it's what I live for. And she's been waiting for me to finish my case. Unfortunately, she won't be there when it ends in June, because the date is out.
Yes.
And she said to me, I must always put Satan at the back, God in front at all times. So those are the 3 major lessons, but also to know when to humble myself. And that's, life lessons that I've acquired, and I appreciate that for life. Mm. It's not everybody. There are people my age who don't have parents.
Yes, let alone grandparents.
Yes. But yeah, that's what I must impart to the people. But where do we start? Let's first start with the sporadic, you know, protests that are happening in the country.
Is it sporadic or is it a pot that has been brewing or simmering in the background? Because always been talk about, Operation Dudula have been carrying on about illegal immigrants.
Yes,
they're not even saying no to immigration or no to people, foreigners being in the country. They're just saying, if you're illegal, leave the country or formalize your stay, and we take it from there. So March, I think probably up to the volume.
Up the volume, and now it's spreading. Look, it was in Tembisa during the course of the week, in Benoni, in the Eastern Cape, and now it's spreading all over Gauteng, KZN. And Fresh, we spoke several times about these kinds of protests, and then there were calls of xenophobia and Afrophobia. But let me tell you, I always say you cannot blame people who take advantage of gray areas in your rules and regulations. You cannot blame illegal or foreigners, not even illegal foreigners, for coming to South Africa and taking advantage of where the law is not enforced.
The loopholes. Yes.
That's one. And without encouraging any illegality or any foreigners getting business opportunities in South Africa. But I think it has been a boiling pot, you know, at the back. And I think when we want government through social media, through podcasts, through protests, and through saying to the government as ordinary South Africans, kindly enforce the law.
Yes.
And even if people are legal, even if people are the law is enforced, it is the primary responsibility of any state to put its citizens first.
Yes.
And even if people are here legally, but let them be under controlled measures that a foreign national who is legal in South Africa should also know that it's got limited movements, conduct, and all those
respect
things.
The house that you're visiting.
You must respect the host. And I think, and I always say to Ben, I was saying to some members of March on March or Operation Dudula, and I've always been concerned with this. The problem is the system that we created. The problem, it's not those who take advantage with the system. Yes, to be illegal in the country must be treated as an illegal person.
Sure.
And but let's focus on what our rules and laws are saying. Typical example, look what happened during the course of this week. There is apparently a ship that was sailing from Cape Verde to Argentina, a tourist ship. And there were three people there who were diagnosed with some disease.
The Hunter virus.
The Hunter virus that we never knew of. Countries refused to accept those people in. And the beautiful, welcoming, warm Republic of South Africa.
Because I was curious as to why, if they're going from South America to Cape Verde, they're by the bum of Africa there.
Yes.
Why are they in a South African hospital?
Because of they were rejected entry into those countries after they were diagnosed with hantavirus.
Why were they not? Surely it would be been quicker to fly them to England.
Exactly. Return where you come from or anywhere in Europe. Fly there. Why fly to South Africa? You understand? But I also said the Department of Home Affairs hasn't issued an official statement. And this is where groups or organizations like Operation Dudula and March on March and anybody else who's concerned about the country will get irritated to say the government is not telling the people, the citizens and the residents, why did they end up here at Mill Park Hospital in Nogal? Yes. And I said, why were they allowed to fly in? Unless Home Affairs comes and says to me, they did not declare their status when they came here. For example, they decided we'll go to South Africa as tourists.
But you are sick, so I don't think you're in a position to make the call. Or are they?
No. What I'm saying is, if you are supposed to get help, for example, from Cape Verde,
yes,
and the Cape Verde government says, but these people are not supposed to come in; they were supposed to sail through, or whichever country, and then they decide let's fly to South Africa. We'll book tickets and fly to South Africa. If you are a British citizen, you don't require a visa to come to South Africa.
Yes,
you can just jump into the plane and fly in. Now, when you arrive at the port of entry, let me use Johannesburg International Airport or OR Tambo in this instance, the National Airport or Lanseria. If they arrive there and they sign or fill in the arrival form and they don't declare their status, and I said, I'm assuming because we don't have the official statement to say one of the reasons they would have come in undetected is because they did not declare. They are here for medical reasons. They just said, we are tourists. I don't say that's what happened. If they declared, then it's going to be the question of, if we knew that these people are coming here for medical reasons, why did we allow them when they have a virus that can spread? Now we are told, since they've arrived in South Africa and out of some of the people who were on those ships, there's already 8 people, of which one has passed on. 8 people are now, it's no longer 3.
Because initially we were told that the hantavirus cannot be spread from human to human. We've since realized that maybe it can be,
yeah.
Which is a problem.
Which is a problem. And it's, again, it's South Africa on the spotlight. You remember what happened with the Italians who came here, or people via Italy who came here through the COVID-19 virus?
Yes.
When it was introduced to South Africa, it was brought by people who flew from Italy.
Mm.
But I was mentioning that as an example to demonstrate how we are laxed with our rules and regulations at the expense of the citizens of this country. I've even adopted an attitude or position that says, even people who are in the country legally, they cannot do as they wish, and they cannot be equaled to long-term residents who have invested here, who had came here with proper papers and jobs. For example, you came here for medical reasons. You have a valid medical visa, which you can stay here, or a study permit. You finish your qualification or you finish your medical records, you overstay. Then you convert your visitor's permit of studying or medical into a temporary residence permit. Then you start working and all that. It is not fair on ordinary citizens to go through that process. The wheels are changing, but they're changing slow. That's why we see all these conflicts and false, xenophobic statements coming out.
But it goes back to the conversation me and you have been having for the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is the problem not the fact that constitutionally, once they're here, you can't do anything about it?
Yeah, that's the bigger problem. The bigger problem is once they're in the country, well, you can do something, but, the lengthy process, the courts, the NGOs, the deportation. When we were here the last episode, I can't recall whether we spoke about it on this platform or on the radio, the deportation of Mr. Mugabe Jr.
Yes.
That caused an uproar, and people were like, but it sounds like you want Mr. Mugabe Jr. to return to America. I said, but you don't understand.
Yes.
There is absolutely nothing in terms of our Immigration Act that forbids Mr. Mugabe to return to South Africa, whether as a visitor or whatever. The only thing that should happen or he should do is he will have to seek permission from the DG of Home Affairs.
Okay.
If he wants to come to South Africa for whatever reason, medical, business.
So has he been PI'd or not?
Yeah, he has been. He has been. He is PI'd, but again, as I say, Fresh, the condition is you have to apply. If, what is his name?
Bellamy.
Sorry?
Bellamy Mugabe
wants
Bells, on the street, keep Bells.
Yeah, when he wants to come to South Africa, despite the fact that he's a convicted criminal and he has been banned to South Africa, you can be banned for being here illegal. There's various time frames. Some it's 5 years, some 10, some 15 years, up to 15 years. Mm. It depends, how did you come in, what did you commit, and what happened when you are here.
Can you
so there's
PI'd?
A court order. There's a court order.
Yes.
But there's an immigration rule.
Okay.
Understand? So that's why one of his conditions is, before he visits South Africa, he can't just come with that 90-day Zimbabwean free visa process. He must apply to that and await whether the DG grants it or not. Chances of that being granted are very slim, but they are not zero.
Mm.
And that is our regulation. And that if we apply and enforce our laws, rules, and regulations correctly, we can manage some of these things.
Now, I'm not for a moment excusing vigilantism.
Mm-hmm.
But at what stage are you allowed as a citizen to, say, affect a citizen's arrest? Where you say, as a citizen of this country, because where now you are illegal here, I'm going to hand you over to the law.
The law enforcement.
As it was. Where does the line start and stop?
Fresh, it's going to be very difficult. Let me tell you, I'm not an expert.
Because are we saying then people must just mind their own business and snitch?
That's basically the first part. Normally, people will talk of a public arrest or citizen arrest.
Mm.
If, for example, you cross and you find a person assaulting a child or a woman,
sure.
And you feel like, I, as fresh, I'm not just going to pass and to look at that child or being robbed.
Sure.
And you intervene, you can arrest that person and call for help from the police services. However, on civil issues, a person is here illegal.
Mm.
There's quite a number of things, and I've dealt with that in the transport sector.
Mm.
Let me make an example. There was an issue where taxi operators between the Free State and Lesotho and between Mozambique and South Africa were fighting each other, others saying they're illegal. Now, if you are fresh, I don't think you have the expertise of knowing which visitor's visa, which visa, which permit is valid or not.
Mm.
If somebody comes and present a passport of Mozambique, if you are not an expert in immigration and passport, you are not trained, how will you know that that passport is legitimate or not?
Mm.
How will you know that the visa, if somebody goes and shows an ID and you suspect he's a foreigner and said, yes, I'm a foreigner, but I got my ID, it says here,
yes.
I'm a resident. How will you know? The only thing you can do is to report to the police.
Okay.
But it will be very difficult for you to get effect an arrest to say, this parcel shop owner from Bangladesh has no permit, because then they will tell you have no authority to can ask them for the permit.
But do you understand why people are upset, though?
Yes, I do. I fully understand why people are upset.
And then
because the state is failing to do its duty.
But do you also understand why people will eventually say, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to do it for you?
I wish we don't arrive there.
Again, not excusing vigilantism.
I
try and view the world from an empathetic lens that I try and put myself in your shoes. That if I feel like I don't have access to services and resources, but other people do that might not be here legally, at what stage do I actually say enough is enough?
And Fresh, I think the state will also have to visit policies. You know, sometimes changing the law takes long and is difficult.
Yes.
But we have already heard from politicians, there's no willingness to change the law. But put in policies that are going to alleviate the situation.
Sure.
I've used the Road Accident Fund as an example. Introduce insurance for foreigners living in South Africa. Then they're not covered by RAF. It will relieve our cost of fuel.
Yes.
We are always hearing government.
Or change the RAF Act.
Or change the RAF Act. Or change the RAF Act that it must exclude illegal people, even exclude foreign nationals. Like other countries.
Why can't you standardize to what other countries are doing?
Yes.
Where if you're visiting, if you don't have travel insurance, then you're going to be a burden to the state, so we're not going to allow you in.
Exactly. The state itself is complaining about strained resources, especially in metros like Joburg, strained resources, clinics, school space. In KwaZulu-Natal, we hear the challenges there in the city of eThekwini. Now, the state itself is talking about strained resources. We've got an estimate of about 25 million immigrants in South Africa, and I don't say illegal ones, okay? And they've got access to resources equally to South Africans. I don't think it's fair on the state itself, on the citizens, and on the strained resources. And if politicians are not going to rise, stand up, and effect rules and regulations, by municipal rules and regulations, you know, to say, if I don't say people must be stopped going to the clinic or the schools or the hospital, but who are you? Why are you here and all that? We don't implement those rules and regulations. And South Africa is the only country where I've seen illegality has so many rights.
Yes.
And that's the challenge. You know, that's why even prisoners has rights. I mean, nobody's worried about nutrition of poor children in this cold weather or when schools are closed. They're not worried about it. It's left to the Department of Education. But everybody's worried that if one prisoner can die of hunger, starvation, or malnutrition, it will be a very big case in court where the family will sue the state.
Mm.
And I think if we don't nip as a nation and as government the challenge we are facing with all these protests, by the time we wake up, the world will be saying we are xenophobic.
No.
I'm very proud and happy with the Nigerian embassy as well as the Ghanaian government.
Yes.
Ghana has issued statements to their citizens and residents And Nigeria has done the same. The ambassador of Nigeria addressed, you know, the media during the course of this week. Both countries were saying people must stop lying. None of their residents has ever been attacked in South Africa. None has been reported on record in the last month or so to have been attacked by any group in South Africa. So our protesters, or South African protesters, in March on March and Operation Dudula, it has been very peaceful protests. And there's not been a vigilantism or attack on people, or xenophobia or Afrophobia. And I think the spread of the social media, the creation of things by AI, it's going to be very difficult. So it is also important that the Department of International Relations must keep a very good eye on these processes. They must be quick to issue statements, or else what is being spread and perpetrated lies in the social media will do what? Will give people like Donald Trump power to say, you see, they are so barbaric that they're even killing their own African brothers and sisters, which is not true.
I heard earlier in the week that the Mozambicans near the border are saying that because of what's happening this side, no South African vehicle will be allowed to cross into Mozambique.
It has happened before, yes. I can tell you. And people will start using that to say they will not allow South African vehicles into Mozambique. It has happened before. I don't know if it happened last week, but when it happened the last time, it was a very unfortunate situation, because it's based on false, on rumors, and on panic. When people are in a panic mode, and it would affect trade and movement of passengers and goods between us and our neighboring countries. Mm. For example, we need a country like Botswana and Zimbabwe to trade with Africa.
Yes.
Understand? We need these two countries, Botswana and Zimbabwe, to trade with Africa. Imagine if Botswana and the Zimbabweans decide no vehicle of South Africa will cross or transit our countries. Then we are doomed, because the target even for business is not only them. We have Zambia, the DRC, and many other African countries that we are trading with. But yeah, let's hope the government will wake up before it's too late and control this situation.
Let's move to the city of Johannesburg.
Oh, city of gold.
Executive Mayor Dada Morero is in a corner, so tight he can't even pivot. Finance Minister Kodongwana sent a letter dated 23rd April, leaked, devastating, and now the talk of every dinner table around the country. Declaring that the city of Johannesburg is in severe financial distress. The numbers don't lie. 25 billion owed to creditors, 3.9 billion in the bank. The metro is, by any honest reading, insolvent. If it was a business, it would go under.
Absolutely, Fresh. Under normal circumstances, a business would have gone under as what? A bankrupt, or, you know, under administration. This is the worst that has happened. This municipality is Tswane, it's one of them, that some years back was placed under administration. That's one, I think, and I foresee city of Joburg going that route. You know what he said about this whole thing of Minister Kodongwana's letter to the city of Joburg? A few months back at midterm, the financial year of municipalities in South Africa, it starts 1st of July every year. So when you look at 1st of July, it means around January the following year, or subsequent year, calendar year, it's a midterm. In January 2026, Treasury, or Minister Kodongwana, had written to the mayor of Gauteng, Ntate Dada Morero, to warn the city of Joburg about the mismanagement, financial conduct, not adhering to plans and budget, and over-committing, including not paying creditors timeously, service providers timeously. So already the Treasury had flagged the city of Joburg for non-compliance to the Municipal Finance Management Act. What happens? They promise to improve. The situation gets worse. 3 months before the end of the financial year, they change, and that was for political reasons, if you recall, when Masuku, who was the MMC for finance, became the deputy mayor 2 months back, and the former MMC for finance in Ekurhuleni, who's an EFF candidate, becomes the MMC of finance. He gave himself 100 days to can sort out the finances of Gauteng. I've never had doubt in the MMC of Gauteng coming in. But by the time he took over, obviously he didn't have 100 days. He had 90 days.
Yes.
Now he's left with 52 days towards the end of the financial year of the municipality. And the minister also, Fresh, I think there's an element of unfairness. You know, I've been in the public service administration for almost 30 years. One of the things you do is at midterm, you've already identified red flags with City of Joburg. Then you still let them promise you that we'll sort it out. I don't think the Treasury was correct and was fair in doing that. You see the red flags and you let them do that. They should have put measures into place or forced the city to put measures into place that will monitor them. You've got 3 billion in the bank account. You owe people 25 billion. So in other words, your deficit is approximately 22 billion, almost 22 billion that the City of Joburg is indebted with. And guess what is their monthly allocation? 800 million. And now the Democratic Alliance and one, even the minister have mentioned it in the letter, they want to blame it or partially blame it to the agreement that Mayor Dada Morero entered into with some with the union. You know, they've entered into a 1.2 billion offset over the next 3 years to cover the shortfall that some has been complaining about. Ironically, this agreement of SAMU, you know, if you recall, it was one of the causes that Mr. Herman Mashaba of Action SA left the Democratic Alliance and left the City of Joburg in the middle of his term. Because he was pro the poor, pro the workers, and he wanted to enter into such an agreement all out over a certain period. And it never happened. So what SAMU did was they simply years back asked the City of Joburg to say, as a metro, just like Cape Town, Ekurhuleni, and Tshwane, can our workers, whether you are metro police or general workers, be paid the same way as? So in other words, there must be a salary benchmark. The City of Joburg has been refusing for all the years until the region agreement last year for election purposes. Now, it amounts to billions. Now that the Treasury or the Minister of Finance is asking City of Joburg to say, you don't have that money. You entered into an agreement with the movement. The Democratic Alliance, after that agreement, they went to the High Court to try and challenge that agreement. They tried first in council. They lost. Then they decided, let's go to the High Court. They lost in the High Court. The Treasury is coming now with the same reasons. It's too late, Fresh. The agreement has been entered into. And as a parent and a black person and a worker, why when there's maladministration, corruption, mismanagement of funds, mismanagement of allocation of funds, why do you want to punish primarily the workers? And as then we are saying people must pay their services.
Yes.
We must say let's create jobs. But now you want to take what you have promised the workers. How are the people of Joburg? Remember, the members of SAMU, the workers of the City of Joburg, I can tell you, majority of them are residents of Joburg.
Yes.
Now, if you take from them, you increase electricity, water, and all other services, how are they going to pay for the services and lead as an example as workers? And I think it's an unfortunate situation.
So this deal with SAMU was 10.3 billion rand.
Yes.
And Minister Godongwana says it's illegally signed and ordered Morero to halt the implementation.
When was it signed, Fresh?
Hmm.
Why did the minister keep quiet until the last 52 days of the municipal financial year?
Hmm.
When the engagements were going on, the minister had already written to the mayor to say, but Joburg, you have crisis. What measures did they put in place? I see City of Joburg being bankrupt. I see it being put under administration. And I also see it being told you are not getting your money. That's why if you look at the wording or the letter from the minister to the mayor was strongly worded in my view and opinion, because at the last paragraph of that letter, which has a 4-page, he even threatens that come the 1st of July, he will invoke section 216, paragraph 2 of the constitution. You know what does that mean?
Yes, sir.
He's not going to give them the money on the 1st of July. They are supposed to get 800 million approximately per month. It's not going to give them money. But why would you do that at this stage?
As comrades, do you think there will be political fallout between the two? Because obviously, the minister is doing his job. I don't, but from comrade to comrade,
yeah, I don't think it
almost feels like, I mean, I remember even regional secretary ANC Joburg, Sasa Manganyi,
yeah,
called for structured intergovernmental dialogue.
Yes.
Which is, let's not watch this in public.
Look,
Arisolvay.
No, but structured intergovernmental, it means let's bring in the MEC of local government.
Yeah, but let's not air it in public.
Yeah, let's try and resolve this thing. I'm saying it is too late. But this also, in my view and opinion, it also may be a political statement of the factions of the ANC.
Okay.
I look at it that way because this the minister and the mayor, they come from the same political party. I'm starting to suspect that they may not be coming from the same faction. And it may be a response because this agreement with SAMU, by the way, it was facilitated by the MEC of local government in Gauteng, of the province, to say, let's have a political, integrated engagement to can reach an agreement to avoid that strike. Remember the strike that brought Joburg to a halt? We were still downtown when this thing happened. Mm. So look, it was clumsy. They are comrades. They should have talked. They should have called in the region. They should have engaged the national leadership or even provincial leadership. You know, Premier Panyaza Lusifi has good working relationships with the three metros of Gauteng.
Mm.
But my concern is why at this stage? Mm. I don't say if public officials do wrong, Treasury must keep on pumping money to them. I'm saying, why do you let them, if you were, your monitoring tools were in place and you picked it up 6 months back, what did you do? Which risk mitigating factors did the Treasury put into or force the metro to implement? But it will be said that the biggest metro in Africa, well, not by size, Tshwane remains the biggest by size, but the most important, the biggest by budget. You know, people of Sandton always boast about the most expensive square meter in the continent. And look, nothing in my little knowledge of public administration experience says by June or end of June 2026, the city of Joburg will be put under administration. But also, first, you know what is said about this?
Mm.
This comes at exactly the same time. If you look at when the announcement, the letter was written, 23rd of April. On the 27th of April, on or before, the president announced that the elections will be on the 4th of November. Now, you've got an MMC from EFF. You've got a municipality or a metro that is about to be put on administration during the election era. A few months, if you look at July to November, it's 3 to 4 months before the election. And you want to go into the election with a city of Joburg being under administration. It may be the ANC which is leading Joburg, running away from taking the responsibility for the failures. They knew about this. The DA took them to court. Action SA has been making noise about the collapse of the city of Joburg. What did they do? They didn't even take a leave from the opposition.
Yes.
You know, if I go into politics, I'm telling you fresh, I will listen to the opposition, yes, and cross-check their noise against the policy of my political party, the policy of government.
Absolutely.
Because you may get things that can make you shine from those who don't like you or from those who oppose you. But I honestly still do not understand why did Minister Godongwana let the cat off his beautiful head at this hour and when the city is already in red and in crisis.
Mm.
It's sad, but my opinion is city of Joburg is going to go under museum. There is no miracle fresh. 22 billion rand is a lot of money. In 52 days before the 1st of July, I want to see that happening. I doubt it. I'm not negative. I doubt it. I doubt what could save Joburg in 52 days.
Yeah.
That they couldn't do in 1 year or in 5 years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in fact, the minister Godongwana says that he's been talking, he's been engaging government for ages, and hence ukhathetse, hence the letter.
Why leave it until now? How do you engage? You can't keep on warning a child.
When's the best timing, though? The timing could have never been right.
No, it's too late. You should have done it, like I said, 6 months ago. We are in the last semester of the financial year. We are in the last 6 months of the election year. And you want to act on that time, then you are also as well not a good administrator. As I said, the MFMA or PFMA or Public Service Code makes provision for measures to be put into place when you smell a crisis coming your way.
Yes.
And they just let it to be red when they were amber.
Plug the hole, don't wait for 10 holes.
Exactly. Mm. So, absolutely. Yeah, it's set for us, the residents of Joburg.
So this week, a full bench of the Gauteng High Court, Judges Yance van, Nieuwen, Hazen, Makose, and Basson, has been hearing what may be the most consequential transformation case of the post-2024 era. Four of South Africa's largest law firms, Bowman's, Weber Wenzel, Vexman's, and Denny's, formerly Norton Rose Fulbright SA, joined by Solidarity, are asking the court to declare the legal sector code unconstitutional and irrational. Yeah. In simple words, what are they fighting about?
They are fighting about a BEE, in inverted commas, that is supposed to be triple BEE, a broad-based black economic empowerment,
yes,
and transformation in the legal sector. The five law firms, actually the other one, I didn't know that it's the former Norton.
Yes.
Is EMS Africa not part of them? At some stage, they were
possibly
one of the big five. Yeah.
Yes.
So what has happened traditionally and historically in South Africa is that these legal firms or law firms, whatever you call them, the white law firms will have more advantage when it comes primarily to government contracts or doing business with government, because they are bigger, they are more established, and they are long established. So let me use one of the government entities as an example that he lawyers a lot. Let's take PRASA. PRASA will need legal services of one, policy development advisors. It will need legal services for labor, because they've got a very big, labor. Maybe of even engineering and structures. And so when you look at these law firms, the so-called big five law firms, but there's more of them, they tend to benefit more on state contracts than the black law firms or traditionally black law firms, okay, because of their standing.
Yes.
You understand? In one of those law firms, you'll find there are 20 directors and directors will be like owners, and all of them are experts in a certain field. One in labor, one in criminal law, one in business law, and all those things. And they team together to form a law firm to then contest for contracts. Obviously, the rest of the people will be junior lawyers.
Yes.
While an average good or big law firm has maximum five senior counsels. Mm. An average, and I can tell you they're not more than eight, the black ones. So to compete with these ones, which has 15, 18, 20 members, that's where the challenge is. They are not getting business. So people were saying they need transformation. But I'll tell you what is my problem with that approach. Why do we want a white law firm, or predominantly white law firm, that was established prior to 1994, most probably, has been doing business with government?
Yes.
Why would we want to force it to transform and have more black faces? I know, years back, a company like Deloitte and Touche, PricewaterhouseCoopers, these ones that are doing auditing for government entities, they were forced to do that. They resisted at the beginning. They were informed by the government to say, you will have to transform or else we won't do business with you. So it started with quotas, 30% of your directors, 40%. And when you arrive at 50% and you've got 50% black people, then we'll say you have achieved the target. And I may be using those numbers as examples. Now, I'm saying these are law firms. They are saying, we are running a business. We have established ourselves to arrive here. Then they decided to take and challenge that legal practice code, whatever, to court. But politically, look at what happened. And this is where, we mix the legs of Sobukwe and Biko. the consciousness of my mind. Guess what they did, these law firms? In this case, all of them fresh, they are legal representatives. If you look at that list, it's black lawyers.
Isn't that ironic?
It's very ironic, but it's a political move. It's a strategy. You are a white law firm. You are being asked by the government, by the Black Business Council and
the BLA
and the Black Lawyers Association, yes, and all that. They are saying, but please, can we share this piece of the cake or the pie? We are saying, I'm not going to share this piece of the cake, and you can't force me. I'm going to court. When you take black people to court who want transformation and you don't want to transform, you then go and hire the creme de la creme of South African senior counsels, an advocate who is an incoming acting judge of the Constitutional Court, Tembeka
Ray Toby. Yes.
You go and take an advocate or senior counsel, Sello, who's at the Matlanga Commission.
Yes.
And many others.
But a gig is a gig. Surely can't expect brothers to stand with brothers.
Okay, fresh.
Against non-brothers.
I understand. But remember, this transformation, it is not about, I also need a gig.
Yes.
These are black lawyers who will benefit from this transformation.
Absolutely.
Themselves. This is not just... I know, and I must put a disclaimer, lawyers are business people. Yes. They're human beings.
Yes.
And the other day on the radio with Tato, I used an example. I said, Tato, take a doctor. When a doctor is faced with a patient with a medical aid, he won't say, I want a medical aid from a black firm or medical insurance from a black insurance. Mm. And I want to treat, I'm a black lawyer or doctor, I want to treat black people first, I'll go to, they don't work like that. There's an element of code of conduct, there's an element of morality, but I want to politicize the whole thing and bring it to an element of consciousness.
Okay.
To say, here is a law or a rule or a practice that has been proposed and it has gone through processes. It's been put to say, please help other people to grow or share the piece of the pie. Your own, help us, me to grow. They go, they take you to represent them. And now we are sitting in court, fresh. And really, this is ironic. We are sitting in court. Black, white lawyers are sitting there. They are saying, we don't want to share with you. They go hire other black lawyers to say, can you please tell the court and convince the court that we don't want to share with you, yourself and your brothers? It's very ironic. You know, it reminds me, in the 80s, the late Agri Cluster of Soweto.
Oh, yes.
Many other, Martin Ntsiliwe, many other journalists, Sam Mabus and all that. Imagine if they would have written articles in the predominantly black newspaper like the forerunner of Soweto. It was called The Post, then it became Soweto. Imagine if those journalists would have written, or editors would have written articles that were pro-apartheid government and anti the liberation movements like AZAPO, PH, and ANC. You understand? Or the working, organized working groups. But also, if you remember history very well, George Bezos, who was seen as a black person, representing Mandela and others on the Rivonia trial. He was an advocate. But the consciousness, the retired Chief Justice, Deputy Chief Justice of South Africa, who deputized almost four Chief Justices, Justice Dikamosenige, when he took office from police, he was the Deputy President of the PAC. Then he became one of the first and youngest black advocates to be admitted as a senior counsel. Imagine if Justice Dikamosenige in 1996-97 at the TRC would have represented Kotsie or Dikorte. Would it be normal that a former liberation fighter who went to prison to become the youngest political prisoner at age 14, Dikamosenige was in Robben Island. He becomes an advocate and he goes out of there. He deputized to be the leader of the PAC and he represents the same people who jailed him and who wanted to murder him and who murdered his comrades. How is that logic? How is that business? How is that a gig is a gig? I want a job. Now I'm doing my job. I don't care who gives me my job. That's why I'm saying political consciousness. To be able to think for, look at what AfriForum is unashamedly doing, fresh. Look at how the Afrikaners have organized themselves. You know this case, it reminds me what? And me and you were adult enough to remember. Volkskas, Sambo, United Bank, I can't remember the Santam. Yeah. They were the four banks that amalgamated to form APSA.
Yes, sir.
Just before the apartheid regime died. You know what happened during that time for APSA to survive? All government departments and salaries were paid through APSA.
Hmm.
That was the condition.
Sure.
You understand? Unashamedly so. So I don't think also it's wise for us as African people to keep on saying to white businesses and companies, please help us. You had apartheid privileges. We come begging with our hands. Say, please help us. We want to be like you. The challenge we are sitting with is ask yourself why all these individual black law firms don't come together and form a big consortium like one of those white law firms. Why don't they come together? Why do they want to be helped and upped? Yes, they may claim that they don't have the resources. But that's when you put pressure on government. To say, government, we are uniting as 10 black law firms. We are coming to be one.
Yes.
Aid us because these white law firms don't want to work with us. Give us business. Let's start somewhere. And why do we want white people to help us to transform themselves? And I've always lamented about this, to say, you can't want people who are in a privileged, comfortable position to surrender and share their privilege.
Yes.
Especially that they've proven from birth that they are selfish people. You can't force them through congratulations and
education
to want to share. And I think I want to see the outcome of the case.
So since you can't force them through legislation to do the right thing, surely you then reserve the right to say, but we will do business with those willing to do the right thing.
Exactly my point.
And it should not be a constitutional imperative at all.
No,
are the rules. We're trying to fix what was wrong from the last 200 years.
Yes.
But if it doesn't work for you, we can't do business with you. Surely that's fair.
You don't even have to announce that you can't do business with them. You know how many times...
Also, you don't owe in on an explanation about
why you gave a gig to somebody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why doesn't the government embark on that path?
In fact, Weber Wenzel says black partners moved from 25% in 2019 only to 38% in 2026. Verksman says 20% to 31%. Bowman says it's held black ownership between 25 and 29 for the decade. And the LSC, gazetted September 2024, demands 50% black ownership by year 5. So this is 2024. So by 2029,
there must be 50%
by
2029. So I think they are realizing that 2029 is getting closer.
And or they're not willing to do anything.
Or they're not willing to do it.
It's done already.
Yeah. We are sharp with what we have done.
Yes.
You understand? But it is up to the state. The state is the biggest stimulator of the economy in every country.
Yes.
If the state wants to aid and stimulate the economy of black law firms, we support that. We think it's the right thing. Let us start behaving and acting along those lines. I've heard lawyers and advocates crying that state lawyers are not briefing black advocates. They are not giving state attorneys. They are not giving them business. Those are some of the issues that you are supposed to manage. This is all management.
Mm.
And you don't always have to fight and impose laws on people. Manage it. You know, if you've got a partner or a kid who's naughty, what do? You close the tab. You start not giving them money for privileges and entertainment until they start towing the line. And as you correctly said, there is nothing that forces the state to do business with companies that are historically disadvantaged. When we've got a black economic empowerment policy, we have the policy. It was adopted in cabinet. Implement it, enforce it. Instead of going to beg people to say, it happened in the mining charter. What happened until today? Remember before Jacob Zuma left the office, the mining charter with quotas was introduced. Boom. We are quiet about it. Trust me, only in 2028, the opposition parties will start saying, but what happened to the mining charter?
Yes.
And we are sitting in the same situation with the legal practitioner's code. But I wish them luck. I just wish the Minister of Justice as well as the Black Lawyers Association and many others like the Black Business Council, they should put their foot down and tell the government, trade and industry, Department of Justice, Department of Finance to say, we want a cut of the cake and demand it.
Yes.
Stop. Absolutely. And also they must also stop working in silos. Trust me, I feel very sad that Advocate Demek and Advocate Silo have accepted this process after the state have given them lucrative positions to be at the Madlanga Commission, who's going to rake millions. Mm. Advocate Tembeka himself, from the 1st of June, he'll be the acting judge of the Constitutional Court. So they are in privileged position. Yes, they work for them. Yes, they deserve them.
Yes.
But once we start thinking along those lines, that it's me, I've studied, I've worked, I've performed, and I deserve this, it ends there. And that's the problem.
That's not in the spirit of the country or the constitution.
Yes, and that's exactly my problem.
Yeah.
We have been divided by slavery, colonialism, apartheid, even post-apartheid. Mm. We are still being divided. You know, I said to somebody on WhatsApp group yesterday, he was saying he thought apartheid is dead. Apartheid is dead. I said, apartheid didn't die. Apartheid, it changed the color and the clothes.
Absolutely. Mm. So a Reuters and CNBC Africa interview, they interviewed 13 current and former employees of three of the big four, describing favoritism in case allocation, passed over promotions, and one black mother allegedly denied flexible hours that her white peers got. Christine Unta of the Legal Sector Charter Councils called it a ceilings these firms believe black people should have. That accusation is now in the public record alongside the firm's transformation stats.
Yeah.
So it will all come out in the wash.
It will come out now because the people like Christine Unta have been very vocal for many years.
Yes.
I've known her to be legally for many years and very vocal about this. And also she's one of the people who fought for a black woman in legal positions.
Sure.
There's transformation that we see that the Minister of Justice is a black woman, the Chief Justice is a black woman. And, you know, we can see that. But let it not only happen on top there in the cream.
Sure.
Let it happen in business at what goes into the pockets of lawyers and advocates and counsels as well.
Absolutely.
Imagine we are sitting here talking on behalf of lawyers, protecting their interests.
For me, it's not even about lawyers only. I think just across the board. Companies have a responsibility to operate within the spirit of the Constitution, within the spirit of what you're trying to build as a nation. And it can't be that you institutionalize keeping black people in that place, because obviously it's not legislation anymore that whites are superior. But if a company, corporate culture, is used to still keep black people in their place, then it must be called out and it must be dealt with.
And I think because now it's impacting lawmakers, law eagles, it will come out. How people always look. I've never been in the private sector, but people who are in the private sector, when we as public servants wishes to go there, they always say, you don't know what's going on. If you think there's oppression in the public service by politicians, not by race, wait until you are in the corporate sector and you will experience that.
Absolutely. Let's go to Zim.
Yes, sir.
Let's go to Zim.
What's happening in Zim?
So President Ramaphosa,
on
Sunday, the 3rd of May, went on a private working visit to Pre-Kaib Farm, the Kwekwe estate of Zimbabwean President Mnangagwa.
Yes.
But why is it our business? It's a private working business. Why are we making noise about it?
There's two reasons. There's two reasons I will tell you. President Ramaphosa belongs to us.
Okay.
He travels even if it's private,
which
is allowed. A nice visit to a farm with a daughter.
How can't a man just go on holiday?
He can go on holiday. The difference is he goes on holiday at our expense.
Yes.
And I say he's flying presidential jet, we fund it, and all of them, it's not only him, and the security of the president and all those, but in this, that's the first part.
In fact, many are arguing that the optics of the thing are the politics of the thing.
That is where the problem
No entourage of ministers, no public diary entry, no advanced announcement from the presidency. The Zimbabweans broadcasted before Pretoria did. Mm-hmm. And the DA's Ryan Smith called it openly fraternizing with dictators.
Okay. I will not go into the discussion of Mnangagwa is a dictator because the African National Congress, South African position has been very clear on Zimbabwe. But yes, the president can go on leave and private trips and travel and a working private visit to Zimbabwe. And what working private visit when a head of state travels, and I can tell you without flinching that some protocol measures will still be followed.
Ah, yes.
You understand?
For security reasons.
For security reasons. One of the biggest...
Who's going to be there when the president is there?
Who is going to be there with the president? What the president is going to do, if he says, I'm visiting my friend, I'm a farm, I own Palapala, he owns a farm, I'm just visiting him to go in. It's okay, we don't have to get into the details. However, for security reasons of our head of state, we want to know who will be part of the trip. What are the security arrangements between the rulers this side in South Africa with the Zimbabweans to provide proper security for our head of state and vice versa? But why there's a noise with this thing fresh is mainly because it became apparent, and I listened to, it was apparent until it was cleared by the presidential spokesperson, Mr. Vincent Magwinya, that they did not know that the man at the helm of this visit, because once you visit, there'll be somebody who is in charge of the visit from the host country or the receiving country. It is somebody who is a fugitive from the law and is actually wanted by the hawks in South Africa.
ZANU-PF aligned businessman Wicknell Chivayo.
Yes, Mr. Yes. Chivayo. Yes, yes. He's a businessman. He's aligned to ZANU-PF.
No, but the presidency said that President Ramaphosa and they had no idea who would be there or that Ntate Wicknell would also be there.
Okay, fresh. I was a diplomat for 13 years and I served in 4 countries. There is absolutely no way that our head of state, be it Mandela, Mbeki, Zuma, Motlanthe, will come to a country even on a private visit. President Zuma had more private visits. President Mbeki had more African work visits than any other. That we do not know or we do not have the list of the guests that are going to dine and interact with the president.
So what, we get the list and then what, we vet it?
It's part of saying we know who's that, because if that would have been done correctly and according to protocol, state security would have put a highlight to the president to say, hey, we've vetted this person. He's one of the people who's on the watch list of the hawks.
Yes.
You don't want to be associated, Mr. President, with that kind of a person. I don't say President Ramaphosa must not go. I'm saying if things were done properly, state security, especially the foreign branch of state security, they would have picked it up, informed the internal branch to say, by the way, Mr. what do you call him? The businessman from Zimbabwe actually has his assets in South Africa that were confiscated by the hawks.
Yes.
And he's on a hawks watch list. Now we see our president there working in the farm with a beautiful daughter dining and dancing with, you know, all over with somebody who is wanted by the elite crime buster police unit of his country. What does it say to us? The optics are very bad.
So what would you have suggested they do then? So let's say they get the list and they go through the list, they vet the list, or they do a Google search, because even a Google search will give you the results.
It's part of vetting.
AI will even give you more results, although some might not be accurate. So we find out that Brawicknell Oda, what do we do after that?
You raise your concerns through diplomatic channels or through the presidency of Zimbabwe. To say, I'm concerned about one of the people who've been there.
But Khabarikena facilitated in the whole thing anyway.
Yes, he was leading. He was leading. I saw videos and pictures. He was in the
forefront.
So you
can't say we don't want the facilitator there.
We can't do it.
You can't say to Zimbabwe, we don't want the facilitator of the thing.
No, you don't say we don't want it. You raise the concern of what is the position of that particular individual in South Africa? That you raise it with them. It is to the conscience and the diplomatic knowledge of the Zimbabweans to know what to do in that instance. Okay. You know, if the man was sitting there as a guest of Mnangagwa having dinner, well, not to be the head of the delegation.
In Mr. Part.
You understand? And that's where the challenge is. That's where I'm saying, I do understand Mr. Magwenya when he says they did not know he will be part of the delegation. But I'm saying due diligence was not done by either state security or the presidential protection unit. Due diligence was not done. That was very clumsy. The optics were absolutely wrong. And now we are sitting with a situation where the president of the Republic of South Africa was dining and dancing with a fugitive from the Hawks in South Africa.
Yes.
And what should it say? It's the same as situations where we had where people, imagine if one of the people there was a member of the drug cartels that is wanted in South Africa. How was it going to look? We are sitting with the Matlanga Commission, the ad hoc committee about criminal and drug cartels. Now imagine if our president goes and dines with that. So people must just do their job. You know, there's nothing wrong with President Ramaphosa visiting his counterpart or his friend or his business partner because it looks like they are both passionate about farming.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's how you do it and at what risks, especially at this time of the week, not even of the month or the year, where the Concord is supposed to, you know, you visit, the Concord is supposed to announce a judgment on a Palapala farm. You decide to visit your neighbor at the farm, and one of the people who are in the forefront of this, it's somebody who's wanted by the Hawks in South Africa for alleged corruption, maladministration, and money laundering.
Yeah.
How ironic. What is the president doing? Why sure. Why does Mr. Ramaphosa subject himself at this critical moment to such risks?
We're out of time. Okay, but so. By the time we go live, Palapala D-Day would have come and gone.
Yes, sir.
It was yesterday at 10 o'clock in the morning. Mm. After 521 days of waiting. And this is the longest wait for a major constitutional ruling in living memory. The EFF, joined by the ATM, want the Apex Court to set aside Parliament's December 2022 vote, rejecting the Section 8-9 panel report, the Ngobo report that found Cyril Ramaphosa had prima facie case to answer over the $580,000 stuffed in a sofa and the parallel investigation that bypassed proper police channels. So this is us speaking after the fact, but we don't have
the facts, yeah.
The decision.
Yes.
What are you thinking is going to happen?
You know why I missed you Thursday at the radio?
Yes.
Because every time I want names and dates, you are quick to do that. So yes, we struggled sir. Without you. I wanted the Ngobo name. I had forgotten who was the justice who presided over this matter. But I did also not know that ATM is behind the EFF. I knew EFF is in the forefront.
Yes.
If we remember the main constitutional decision that happened in this country, it was the EFF again.
Sure.
Being in the forefront when they took the Speaker of Parliament to the Concord to reverse the, what do you call it, the decision of not voting against the Nkandla provisions. And now it's happening again. Now it's no longer going to be Nkandla. We're going to hear pala. And look, fresh, there's two ways. There's two things that's going to happen. Either the Concord is going to agree with Justice Ngobo's outcome.
Okay.
To say there's a prima facie evidence that President Ramaphosa has a question to answer.
There's a case to answer.
There's a case to answer, and he misled the parliament because at that time he primarily denied, if you recall. That's the first option. The second option is for them to say, no, Ngobo is wrong and this matter is dismissed. We are not going to force the Speaker of Parliament to can reverse the decision of the vote. But what is ironic and critical about this, the judgment comes when the African National Congress is no longer having the majority vote in parliament.
Oh, yes.
So if the Concord rules in favor of the EFF ATM and agrees with Justice Ngobo's recommendations, I can tell you it's going to be very difficult for members of the GNU to can defend and or protect President Ramaphosa. The ANC has 39.8%, average 40%, or you know, if you round it up, of the, you need 51% to decide to vote to impeach him or not. I when I look at all parties in the GNU, the Democratic Alliance, Freedom Front Plus, they will not risk in an election year to protect President Ramaphosa because they will dismally lose votes. Because this was their matter primarily before they tasted the soup of the GNU. That's one. Two, maybe parties like the Patriotic Alliance may vote with the ANC to keep the president and maybe to, you know, to push them from 40. They will need, let's say, safely 12%. They can have 11, but safely 12%
yes.
of the parties in there for him not to be impeached. I can tell you if they go on a secret vote, because that's what the EFF is going to push if the Concord rules in favor of the EFF, to say they must go back and vote. Should they push for a secret ballot in a national assembly? I even see some of the ANC, because of factionalism, say he's a burden to the organization.
Sure.
Let him go. But this is my prediction.
Yes.
Having have noticed how the courts have behaved towards the cases of President Ramaphosa, I don't see them ruling anything against him, especially at this juncture.
Are you suggesting that they're applying the law subject to who they're applying it against?
Exactly, to who? Fresh, it's they are human beings. And also look at the stability of the party. Judges are appointed by the president. Judges are human beings. Judges belong to political parties.
Yeah, but the law is the law. What does the law say?
Now, let's say they go with the law.
Yes.
Because to me, if they go with the law, President Ramaphosa will be out of office. He's going to be voted out of the office by the National Assembly. He's going to be impeached because of the Palapala thing. But knowing how President Ramaphosa operates, trust me, the man, after being left out of the G7, if you notice this, he has taken the foot off the pedal a little bit. I see Paul Mashatile coming up. He's more on the podium. He's more addressing national issues. And I think President Ramaphosa is going to do something that we always cry for. That is, if the Concord rules in favor of the EFF and agree with Justice Ngobo's recommendations, I think President Ramaphosa is going to resign.
And surely...
before he's impeached.
And surely the Nkandla ruling was a precedent.
It's a very good precedent. Very good one. So Nkandla ruling has come to bite the same people that were pushing for it.
Yeah.
And they don't have the majority at the moment. You see, there's the other difficulty. The ANC at that time during Nkandla, I think they had, 56%, if I'm not wrong? They now have 40% of that parliament that must vote. I see a lot of abstaining, which is not going to help. Even other parties, they may abstain. That like him or prefer him. They may abstain, but I unfortunately, to our viewers and followers, they will be knowing I'm being a sangoma of politics.
Yes.
But we'll see next week. But this is my prediction. If anybody is going to try and impeach President Ramaphosa due to the Palapala thing, the man is going to resign, and he will resign fast. He will not accept to be humiliated.
True.
Like that, especially that his political party can, as men on Vula Mokonyane will say, can't defend him Kadibono anymore.
Yeah, but also this would mean that for all future presidents, we'll probably get more accountability.
Yeah, after this, look, first, after this, there's going to be more accountability. Political parties will be weakened.
Sure.
After, you know, these elections and all that, the ANC will be more weakened post-2029. It will not even achieve 80% in my prediction.
Yeah.
But what is important, it's accountability from political office bearers in the country.
Sure.
And I think that's what South Africans need. We need, I mean, President Ramaphosa, please, man, why ufihla the dollar? Kids are how, if it's your money, why hide them? Why not handle them and lead as per example? As per the man who said, Chuma Mina, I'm going to clean government. You swelled the government even further. Understand? And why? Why? We were told that he's a rich man. He can't steal. We don't say he stole. It's his money. But there are rules of how to handle your money in the country.
Brother, where do we find you online, sir?
Yes, thanks, Fresh Online. Let's continue to engage. Yeah, please, let them continue to engage with me after the show WhatsApp, +27838847787, or on social media at Boats and M. And for bookings and engagements, botsanm@gmail.com.
And that's it. We're done. Another episode in the bag. This is almost at 9:38. This is Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrix.
Monday morning,
just after 8, Thursday morning, just after 8, in context with Botsang on 938.co.za. If you're in Johannesburg, 938 FM. We're also on the DSTV audio bouquet. Coming to you live from Discover TV in Four Ways, let them be your stage. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. You can email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. From myself, Fresh, and Botsang, and our executive producer, Keletso Modisa-King, and our film crew, Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works. Until next week, have yourselves a wow week in spite of yourselves. Please remember to like, subscribe, and share.